WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Reaction to President Trump's expected signing tomorrow of an executive order to begin dismantling the Department of Education. Bob Callender is president of the Warren, Michigan Teachers Union.
About $15 million in federal funding comes into our school district alone. That's easily 150 to 200 staff positions that could be impacted if cuts are made at the federal level.
Another storm system is affecting millions of people in the country's midsection. Meteorologist Craig Allen.
Rain and snow right through the center of the nation. Very heavy snow, blizzard conditions moving on up through the upper Midwest and upper plains.
Greenpeace is ordered to pay a pipeline company nearly $667 million in damages for its role in protests against the Dakota Access Pipeline. Greenpeace attorney Deepa Padmanabha.
This has been going on for, over 8 years. It is the end of one phase, but the fight is far from over. We will be appealing. There's a lot for us to dissect.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
The Packers add a wide receiver. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Packers have signed wide receiver and kick returner Mecole Hardman. He turned 27 last week, 5'10", 195 pounds. He won 3 Super Bowl rings with the Chiefs before spending some time with the Jets. Andy Reid on why they took him back.
He brings good energy and to the other couple guys that we have. Speed, not the biggest guy, but speed guy, so... You like those light components.
Hardman ran a 4.340 his rookie season. He signs a one-year deal with Green Bay. March Madness. The Badgers arriving in Denver last night, getting ready for their game tomorrow against Montana. NBA, the Bucks losing at Golden State, 104-93. Giannis says the Bucks need to be more aggressive.
As a team, you just got to play free. You got to play free. You got to play. There's got to be like a joy within the game. And stop thinking about like negative stuff.
That's Giannis Antetokounmpo with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Wherever you are in Wisconsin, there's a free and confidential Aging and Disability Resource Center, ADRC, or Tribal Partner Agency. We're here for older adults, adults with disabilities, and your families. ADRCs are a bridge to support for benefits and financial assistance, transportation, in-home care, and more. Get to know your local ADRC and connect with resources today. Call toll-free 1-844-WIS-ADRC or go to findmyadrc.org. Paid for by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is The Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Cannot wait. Can't wait. Can't wait for Donald Trump to host the Kennedy Center Honors. Because evidently, they're having their annual honor ceremony. Trump thinks that he's going to host it because he's the king of ratings, whether we like it or not. And I'm like, you know what? I hope he does more of this stuff. I hope he does more. Maybe start a podcast. Do something other than continuing to assault our democracy. Maybe there's a thought. Everyone's talking about constitutional crisis. No, they're wiping their behind with our Constitution. They're attacking it in every way, shape, and form. And yet our mainstream media, they cover things like, it's the 1990s. Everything's going to be fine. We've got an administration who's not listening to anything the court system has to say. But never mind, never mind. And soon we won't have to hear about any of it. And this is the weird thing. Evidently, Trump and his Elon and his Doge ferrets, they're gutting funding to VOA, Voice of America, and Radio Free Asia, which, as you know anything about the history of VOA, we would send radio signals into places that were communist places that were bad, places like China. Send in stories about how bad the human rights abuses are in China. So you know who's thrilled today that we're gutting funding for radio, for Voice of America and Radio Free Asia? Yeah, the Chinese. They're thrilled about it because, now their citizens aren't going to know. So my mind started going, you know, Russia has already put RT, Russian television, into the U.S. Chinese own some outlets. You know, maybe, I don't know who's going to be our savior in that. But I do know who MAGA is looking at anointing as their savior, their next savior. Because dear leader's not going to be around forever. And Indiana Senator Jim Banks, Republican Indiana Jim Banks, said that he thinks it's inevitable at this moment that J.D. Vance will be the heir apparent. He's the future of the America First movement because he's already proven himself. I'm not sure what that means. I'm not sure what he's proven. But hey, a future, right? And if you've paid attention on Monday to the destruction of our nation, Elon and his Doge ferrets, along with law enforcement, kicked in the door to the U.S. Institute of Peace and ousted the independent agency there. Because, hey, Trump wants it. Dear leader wants it done. So it shall be done. Now, understand, the Institute of Peace is a congressionally chartered nonprofit. It does not fall under the executive branch. He doesn't have the authority to do this, but they did it, and with the help of law enforcement. So this idea that you think that, you know, law enforcement or the judicial system is going to save us, it's not. And this is where I get into this place where there's the belief in what's happening, and then there is what is happening. I've got red hat acquaintances who think this is just great. We need a clean house. Without understanding that they're going to be next. Understand, we're all in the shark tank. We're all next. It's just a matter of when. And I look at this statement by data scientist and political consultant David Shore, who looked at, you know, the last couple of elections. And he said there's how many elections you vote in and how important politics is to your identity. And then there's how closely you follow the news. There's one thing about being political, but there's one thing about actually getting information. He says across all of these, there's a constant story. He says the most engaged people swung towards Democrats between 2020 and 2024, despite the fact that Democrats did worse overall. And he said on the other side, people who were the least politically engaged swung enormously against Democrats. He said there are a group that Biden either narrowly won or narrowly lost 4 years ago, but this time voted for Trump in double digits because, again, it was a feel. I want cheap eggs. It was an anger. It was I listened to crazy right-wing blather in every way, shape, or form. And you look at our media, it has been taken over by right-wing voices. From sports talk to regular political talk to what you hear on the radio while you're listening to music. Everything now in the media sphere is got a right-wing bend to it. Because that's what the moneyed interests want. So for my union red hat friends, did anyone happen to see Senator Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee and Senator Mike Lee from Utah, who are introducing a piece of legislation to destroy labor unions for federal workers? It's the Federal Workforce Freedom Act. Yeah, the freedom of people like Trump to fire workers at will for any reason, or more likely, no reason. Or for the reason of not being sufficiently loyal. As I said during the campaign, these folks are making patronage great again. So either you're a diehard loyalist and never step out of line, or you don't have a job. Welcome to America. And the interesting part of this is if you think they're going to stop at federal unions, it's going to trickle down to all. Look at what Utah just did in their state. They're going after, and they've basically outlawed, basically eliminated, public sector unions. So, yeah, they're starting with the federal workforce. Eventually, they're going to trickle down to public sector and then the private sector. And once they kill off the public sector, the labor movement in this country is hamstringed in a way that it hasn't been since unions were illegal. And then we'll get back to where the billionaires, the Elon Musks and the Donald Trumps want this country. The have everything and the have nothing. Is this what you voted for? I keep coming back to this because as Elon and all of them are doing the things that they're doing, gutting every branch of government, gutting the number of employees, career service employees, as they're going after and destroying these agencies that help people, what will replace it? Will it be nothing? Will it be a for-profit corporation? When they finally kill off Social Security, when they finally convince us that we'll see that UFO before we see a Social Security check. And look, I always fought back against that. I'm like, no, that's ludicrous. Americans would never allow that. I am right now, in this moment, not so sure that I won't see an alien spacecraft before I get to Social Security, because these people want to destroy it. And I don't care what they're saying. It's what they're doing. And it's what they've written. It's who they've always been. And it's who they are. So for all those folks right now, especially my red hat voters who enthusiastically were out there on the line supporting Donald Trump, when that check doesn't come, will that be the moment that we awaken? For my union red hat friends, when they pull your union card, and you no longer get the decent wages, the good benefits, the retirement security. When that happens, will it have to be then when you wake up? Or can we say, look at what they're doing now? How do we stop them in this moment? Because this isn't what we voted for. This isn't what we were told. This wasn't the sales pitch. What's it going to take? What's it going to take to get people organized around the idea of these people want to fundamentally change what America is? They want to fundamentally change the American dream to where it's a dream, it's reality for some, but an absolute nightmare for the rest of us. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, we talk a little bit about Social Security and how, yeah, they're destroying it. You're not going to want to miss this. Stick around. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So Ann sent me an email. It's one of those I don't know why you would write this down. There's a level of, I don't know where you get your information, but this is one of them. And she was complaining, in her words, that everyone is collecting Social Security and none of them have paid into it. So literally everybody is getting something that they didn't pay for, her words, and then went on to complain that there are 11-year-olds and 300-year-olds collecting Social Security. Now, I don't know about the 300-year-old. Social Security wasn't even around for someone to be that old to collect it. But I do know probably about the 11-year-old, because at 13, I collected Social Security and collected it until I was 18. Because my mother had passed away and I got the survivor benefit. So if someone's telling you there's an 11-year-old collecting Social Security, it's because there's been a tragedy in their life. And maybe, just a thought, maybe we don't attempt to attack them. And maybe we don't attempt to attack Social Security overall, because it is the greatest anti-poverty program ever created. And here to share some thoughts on what's going on right now as Trump, Elon, and the Doge ferrets are going after our Social Security, I've asked Molly Weston Williamson to come share some thoughts with us. She's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. She's got a new piece out titled Cuts to Social Security Administration Threaten Millions of Americans' Retirements and Disability Benefits, and might want to listen. Molly, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So am I the only one that's shocked by the level of ignorance that I see when people say, there's a 300-year-old, you know, they're getting Social Security, you know, a president. You know, on the big stage saying, there's a 300-year-old, there are 250-year-olds collecting Social Security. Am I the only one who thinks this is just, oh my God, how'd we get here?
I mean, this is a claim that's been debunked over and over and over again. We have a system in which we keep records of almost everybody. That includes records of people who are no longer with us, but they're not receiving benefits. The fact that they're in the system isn't a sign there's a problem. And what's more is we're already seeing the ways in which this sort of wildly exaggerated claims of fraud or abuse is harming real people. In Seattle, there was a story just this week of an older gentleman whose Social Security incorrectly decided he was dead and not only cut off his benefits, but took them out of his bank account. The Seattle Times was reporting that this week. So what we're seeing is that we know there are lots and lots of people who rely on Social Security. There's more than 70 million people who get Social Security benefits every month. That's seniors, that's people with disabilities, that's children receiving survivor benefits. It's about 1 in 5 Americans are getting benefits. And that's not 300-year-old people who are better maybe in a horror movie about the man who never died. It's real people who really need these benefits for their retirement, to deal with the loss of a parent, to deal with their disabilities. And these attacks from the Trump administration with Elon Musk and Doge out in the lead are jeopardizing those benefits that millions and millions of people rely upon each month.
No, and it's going to cause enormous chaos because, you know, I know a lot of people who, you know, Social Security is their retirement. I, unfortunately, during their work lives, didn't have the good fortune that I've had with a defined benefit pension, or were able to contribute to these crappy 401ks or these defined contribution plans. So they're, what they've got at the end of the road is what Social Security has put forth. And now you're going, we want to privatize, destroy, or worse yet, you know, wither it down to nothing to where it just fails. And that's my fear. As they're closing offices, as they're firing workers, my fear is the checks just don't come, and then people struggle, and maybe we start seeing people dying because they can't afford their medicine, they can't afford food, they can't afford to pay their rent. All these horrible things happen because of incompetence, and I would argue planned incompetence, but you know, danger just the same.
You're not the only one who has that fear. So Martin O'Malley, who's the immediate past commissioner of the Social Security Administration, has really been ringing the alarm bells about how all of these staff cuts, customer service cuts, office closures, the fear that what those are going to add up to is a system collapse and an interruption in benefits in the near future. And the thing is, Social Security has been running for almost a century at this point and has never missed a payment. That's a critical part of what Social Security does. And if all of these cuts, all of these restrictions add up to, for the first time in history, Social Security misses a payment, the results will be catastrophic. There's about 7 million seniors for whom Social Security makes up 90% or more of their income. If those checks don't show up, or even if they're a little late, that's folks who aren't making rent, who aren't buying groceries, who aren't keeping the lights on. For people with disabilities who face really strict restrictions on their ability to work or to save and to keep their benefits, if those benefits aren't showing up, that's going to basic needs right away. In January, there was a survey which found that among Americans 65 and older, 42% said that without their Social Security retirement benefits, they would not be able to pay for necessities like food, like housing, like clothing.
No, and this is where the conversation of what was the things like before Social Security? Because I know a lot of people think of Social Security as a retirement plan, and I've never said that. I've always said it's an anti-poverty program. It's that line in the sand that says, as a society, no one's going to fall below this level of income. And we've done a masterful job with seniors because, as I remember the numbers, and you're the expert here, but before Social Security, it was like 80% of seniors lived in poverty. I don't know if you've checked the numbers, you know, not too recently, but it was like 10, 12% now living in poverty. Sounds like a really, really successful program. You know, maybe I got my numbers skewed, but that's the gist, or am I off base?
You're totally right. I mean, creating Social Security is one of the best things this country has ever done. It's the crown jewel of our safety net. It's the nation's largest anti-poverty program for seniors, for people with disability, for children. It's really our baseline way of saying, we're going to show up for you in your moments of need. We're going to plan for it. We're going to work together to make it happen. And we've created the system that's not perfect, but it's extraordinarily efficient. The administration is ridiculously cheap in conjunction with the quality of the benefits they provide, and it's incredibly reliable. Social Security is a promise that Americans have built lives and livelihoods on for almost a century, and it's at risk in a way that it hasn't been in a very long time.
Now, to that point, I mean, we've gone through a world war, we've gone through other wars, we've gone through major recessions, we've gone through crisis after crisis, and that check in those folks' mailbox showed up every month on time and didn't bounce. My problem with where Musk and the Doge ferrets and Trump is allowing this to go is we privatize, profitize, and end up, well, sorry, we went broke. Oh, you didn't have enough money? Sorry. Not coming this month. That's my concern. Because look, you know, we've all had older, you know, grandparents and grandparents who have needed this. I can't imagine what their lives have been without it. And that's something each one of us, I think, across this country, I've got to start thinking about. What does that look like when the check bounces?
I think that's exactly right. And I think we're looking at a very real risk that folks aren't going to get those benefits that they have relied upon because of all these cuts. Social Security staffing is already at a decades low. It's way below where it should be, even though more and more people are hitting 65 every year, more and more people are needing to rely on these benefits. So it's already incredibly slim. The other thing I think we're looking at is, even if we can keep checks going for existing claimants, it's going to be really hard to access benefits for anyone who's not in the system already. Because what we're seeing is they're looking to cut staff by 12%. It could easily end up being more. They're threatening to close field offices. They're restricting access to things like service by phone. So if you're trying to file for retirement for the first time, it's going to be that much harder. It's going to be that much slower. And some folks are just not going to be able to access those benefits, particularly folks who find it harder to get to an office in person or have less support. For people with disabilities, it's already bad.
Right.
There's more than 1 million people waiting for an initial determination of a disability claim. Those are folks who've been waiting for months and months in a system that is really difficult, that is already has a lot of burdens, a lot of them coming from some of these really exaggerated concerns about fraud. That's going to get worse fast. People are going to wait longer. And we know that when folks are waiting, they're running up credit card debt. They're having to sell their homes. They're having to go into bankruptcy. Most of the time, folks waiting for a disability determination don't have health insurance while they're waiting. So we're cutting off the time when they can get to the care that they need for the health. So we're going to see a system that is already under strain, that is already understaffed, get worse fast in ways that are going to harm all of us. Because what this comes down to is cuts to capacity, cuts to customer service are cuts to Social Security. They're coming between you and your benefits, and we need to understand them and fight back on that basis.
You know, everything you just laid out there, you know, my response to that is, isn't that the point? Isn't that what they want to do? I mean, isn't it that they want to, you know, much like the health insurance companies have gotten away with for far too long. We deny, we delay in the hopes that you just die and we don't pay. I mean, I hate to put it that way, but it seems, you know, maybe you've got a different idea, but it seems like that's kind of the plan.
So if what you want is to make sure people get these benefits that they deserve, to get these benefits that often they have been paying into their entire working life, this is not what you do.
Yeah, not deserve, Molly, not deserve. These are benefits that were earned. You paid for this. This is part of the price of admissions into this country. You paid those Social Security taxes. You're part of our society. Not deserved. And I know this sounds like semantics, but these are things that Americans have earned. And to take that away, it's infuriating.
It's infuriating. It's maddening. And I think what's particularly difficult is we have a system that is already super, super efficient. It's much more efficient than the private sector. It's exactly what we all aspire to in terms of making sure that as close as we can get to every dollar that's going in is going right back out in benefits to people who have earned them, to people who need them, to people who are counting on them. And instead of strengthening that, instead of building on that, instead of investing in that to make sure that it's gonna be there for people who need it, we are slashing it to the bone when there's no capacity to spare. And claimants are gonna suffer, customer service is gonna suffer, people with disabilities, seniors, kids relying on survivor benefits, we're gonna feel that pain all around this country.
Now, you know, one of the things that, you know, just popped into my head is, you know, during the campaign, people were talking about, well, I just want government to run more like a business. And, you know, as we're talking about this, this frame has popped back into my head of running government like a business. And we're now running or heading towards running Social Security, you know, like an Elon Musk run business. We're going to cut to the bone. We're going to hell with service. We don't care. Look, I've got a dear friend. Her mother's trying to get her Social Security, and she got a robocall saying, hey, we're going to call you on Monday, you know, you got an appointment, call never came. And, you know, they're very functional, they're computer literate, you know, they're persistent. I think about the people who aren't quite as computer savvy, aren't quite as able to navigate systems, and how this is going to screw them over. It's all bad in every way, shape, or form. And my frustration is, I just don't know that the average everyday citizen is hearing the kind of destruction that's coming and understands what the future is going to look like in a world where that Social Security check may or may not show up, check may or may not bounce, you may or may not have funds coming. I just don't think we've really thought this through very well.
I mean, the vast majority of Americans have never lived in a country that doesn't have Social Security. We've never not had that umbrella over our head, and the rains are coming. And so really, I think what we all have to wrap our head around is each of these pieces add up to whether that system keeps functioning or not, whether it keeps showing up. And even the things that seem small or technical are really real barriers getting between people and their benefits. So this like technological access piece, Social Security has gone back and forth a bunch and keeps getting called out in press reports about how much to restrict service by phone. But one thing they've publicly announced is you can no longer change your bank information by phone. So you can't change your direct deposit. And it seems like a small thing, but if you don't have the right bank account information, you're not getting your money. And if you can't change it by phone, what do you do? So most Social Security claimants are over 65, which is the age group least likely to have broadband at home, least likely to have smartphones. So it's going to be difficult to do online, or you go in person, except DOGE is threatening to close field offices. Offices are understaffed. You typically have to get an appointment, which is harder and harder to get. So each of these pieces add up to, here's another barrier between you and your benefits. Here's another barrier between you and what you have earned, what you haven't earned the right to count upon. And that's going to add up to people not getting what they need. And it's going to be the folks with the least access and the least support who are going to get hurt the most and the fastest.
So, you know, again, what are you watching for? I mean, obviously you're the expert in this, and you're the one who's keenly aware of every move that's being made. What are you seeing in the coming weeks and months that we should all be concerned about?
So keeping an eye on what those staffing numbers look like, the announced target is to cut 7,000 jobs, which would be about a 12% reduction in an agency that's already at something like a 25-year staffing low. It could easily be more because senior folks are leaving or being pushed out, including, by the way, the folks responsible for information security at the agency that has all your bank accounts, that literally gave you your Social Security number. If those senior folks aren't there to protect your information, that's all of us on the line. That's like the worst bank hack in the world.
So now that you brought, since you opened that window, I got to ask that question, because now you got you know, Musk and the Doge ferrets, you know 19-year-old kid named Big Balls, who has potentially access to my Social Security information. Are you kidding me?
And not just them, right? So what if they're not securing that information? Either they've taken it out of Social Security, or the information within Social Security isn't being protected properly. Commissioner Astrew, who was the Social Security Commissioner under President Bush, has been really ringing the alarm here about what happens if foreign hackers get that information on each and every one of us. Like, that is some of the most important information to keep safe for all of us. And it's at risk in a way that it never has been before.
Wow. That's all I can say. But hey, at least we got cheap eggs, right?
I don't know what grocery store you're shopping at, but I'm sure not seeing that.
Molly, I appreciate the time. As always, keep up the great work. I look forward to talking to you again really soon. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much.
Molly Weston Williamson, senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. Make sure you check out her piece on the cuts to Social Security Administration and what that's going to mean to all of us. And look, Anne, you know, the 11-year-olds, yeah, leave them alone. The 300 years old, that's not happening. And if there were, how come we're not seeing perp walks every single day of Granny and her walker being thrown into jail? Just want to hear your thoughts. More after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A clearing sky for tonight, a low in the low 20s with the wind diminishing. Sunshine returns for tomorrow, high mid 40s. Maybe a shower Friday, high mid 50s and breezy. The weekend looks cooler, dry Saturday, some rain possible Sunday. Currently 35 degrees.
The Dom Salvia Show.
Musk is so arrogant that he is even intervening right here in the state of Wisconsin.
Republican Rep. Brian Stile said in a statement that Sanders was on a fear-mongering tour. Maybe you should be afraid when billionaires can buy the presidency, when billionaires can buy elections. I think that's a little scary. And
I think so.
We the people should do something about it.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So our quote of the day from Evan Fineman, a former Commerce Department official who his job had been to be the director of Biden's $42.45 billion broadband equity access and deployment program, otherwise known as BEAD. Now, understand, now you've got Trump Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick pledging to vigorously review BEAD. So Fineman's quote is, you know, going, hey, stranding all or part of rural America with worse internet so we can make the world's richest man even richer is yet another in a long line of betrayals by Washington. And the thing is Evan's not wrong. So for all my rural red hat neighbors, if Trump were president in the 40s, you'd still be reading by candlelight because, well, these are massive investments. And here to share some thoughts on Biden's $42.5 billion investment in broadband, a lot of it in rural technology, I've asked Mike Tharp to come talk with us. Mike is a member of CWA's Broadband Brigade. He's also chair of the Georgia Political Council for CWA, the Communication Workers of America. Mike, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
So what do you make of Evan Fineman's statement that, hey, yeah, this is yet another in a long line of betrayals by Washington, and only going to make the world's richest man a little bit richer?
To me, it's really sad because we were counting on this funding. My union brothers and sisters, we were looking forward to putting this fiber out here. We're still counting on it. But it's really sad state of events that we're moving toward possibly leaving the communities with a substandard broadband connection. So, yeah, it's not good news.
It's garbage. Well, let's talk about this BEAD program, to be honest. You know, during the Biden years, we got some investment, a little bit of infrastructure investment, a little bit of commitment to broadband, $42.45 billion in this broadband equity access and deployment program. Walk me through what it was and what its goal is, so our folks get a baseline.
So that funding is to spread out, and well, let me start with COVID really opened our eyes to show how bad our infrastructure is as far as broadband's concerned. When folks are having to go to the McDonald's to do their school program or programs. This made so that we have funding to build out the next generation of fiber optic networks for the future. As the funding has gone through, it's made sure that it's pushed that funding toward good union jobs. So the thing I like to let people know is there is no technology out there that's faster than fiber up and downstream speeds. And to know that this is going to go toward a Starlink, where it's an inferior speeds and inferior technology, really concerns me.
No, and look, the fact that your internet is not really great tells me we need to get it into your neighborhood as well. And look, in rural communities across this country, if you don't have access to high speed internet, if you don't have access to this super highway of information, you're going to be left out. And I use the example, if Trump were president in the 40s, people would still be doing things by candlelight, because it was only because of government investment that you got these investments into these rural communities where it's not profitable. Only government would have brought electricity to rural communities. And I think only government can bring good high-speed internet to rural communities like mine in this day and age. So to have Trump and his commerce guy saying, well, we're going to look at all the other things, like Starlink. It feels like a betrayal.
One thing I would add is that, you talk about in the 1930s, there was the 1932 Telecommunications Act that enabled everyone to get telephone service.
Right.
And to be honest, I'm just an old telephone man. So that's where I started. But I've had to transition into broadband, and I splice fiber. So I'm glad the future is there for us. But that's how they got dial tone to everybody across the nation. Was a little bit of government help and private industry together, they were able to make that happen. But that's the same with fiber build out. And it's a necessity. But if we're investing taxpayer money into these programs, it needs to be a long-term, future-proof technology. It needs to provide good quality union jobs for people across the country and not leave anybody out. So I think that's a
it really is an all of the above kind of strategy. And then you talk about the jobs that are being created. These are good paying union jobs with good wages, solid benefits, training advancements, all of the things that we should want as a society, all of the high road stuff that we should want and workers should want and communities should want because of the reverberation effect that goes through as those high wages are being paid, are being used in the community. There's so much good here. And to have an administration say, "Well, we're going to rethink this," is problematic.
Absolutely, I feel like the words conflict of interest comes to my mind right off the bat. I think as an independent, if you were an independent viewer looking at this going on, you would immediately think that if you compare the two different technologies and the benefits and the rewards of each, you would automatically come up and say fiber optic broadband is the choice that we need to be making here.
Yeah.
There's just so many different levels that it's superior than the Starlink. platform.
But it takes people to lay the cable. It takes a lot of intensive labor to get this stuff hooked up to the homes. It's all of that. What we're going to be sold is, hey, here's a quick fix, and you can get this crummy bit from Musk, which I've had people who I've talked to people who have had it, and it's not great. I mean, it's bad. The latency is not great. But here again, this is about quick, cheap, fast, and rewarding one person over a whole community. And I look at your state of Georgia. You know, how much money was going into your communities from this program to get rural communities and folks the kind of broadband access that I think we all agree in this time, in this position that we're in, everyone should have access to? What kind of monies are coming into your state of Georgia alone?
So Georgia was should be $1.3 billion to build out broadband. And, you know, when I think about the cost of building out fiber networks, you know, we need to look at an initial cost. And it's basically the government giving companies a helping hand to get this installed and built out. And then once that's done, they're done. Whereas when you look at Starlink, this is the real thing that really blows my mind. And it just doesn't make any sense to me. So Starlink is hoping to launch 42,000 satellites, which they need to replace every 5 years. So that means that from now on, they're going to be looking for government subsidies to help them stay up in there and continue to work while providing an inferior service.
42,000 satellites?
Correct.
As if there's not enough space junk up there, we're going to be sending 42,000 of them up into space every 5 years?
Yes. And in January, they had 120 that were scheduled to deorbit. So that's 120. So they're going to be replacing those back up. And the other thing to think about is how many launches they're going to have going up to bring up new satellites. And we're going through all these hoops. And we're still having inferior service. So like you mentioned, like space debris, that's another big issue with Starlink. So with 42,000 satellites, it doesn't take much to imagine a world where they, you know, a couple bump into each other or something hits one. And these are traveling around the Earth at 17 to 25,000 miles an hour. And you could have a cascade effect where they spread out and start knocking each other out. You could actually have a situation where you can't launch anything because you have too much space debris.
Jeez,
so man. It can be really concerning. Whereas if we have an issue with our fiber, I hop in the truck and I roll out and I fix it for you.
Wow. And my mind has gone to this, you know, when Musk's rocket blew up and their statement had been that it was an unscheduled rapid disassembly. And I'm going, you know, can you come up with any more ridiculous way of saying it just blew up and it wasn't working? I look at this, and again, I come back to the investments of our tax dollars have to be done in a way that are beneficial to not just, the people doing it, but also the community as a whole. What you've laid out to me makes incredible sense. Why aren't people more engaged and upset about it? I guess where I'm at is we've got a guy who's running the Department of Government Efficiency. What you've laid out is what Biden had put forth is the most efficient, sane, rational, you know, the best investment system possible. And yet the people who are talking about government efficiency have, well, not.
Yeah. I really appreciate the Biden administration because they put rules in there to make sure that this isn't money just wasted. And when they want to flip the script on us, I'm really afraid that, you know, people are going to have a lot of buyer's remorse.
I got to think they already do.
After the fact.
I got to assume some of your members voted for Trump. And this wasn't what they voted for. This isn't what they were told. They were told they're going to get cheap eggs. And now, you know, their jobs could disappear. And now the investments for the future and their family's future are going to disappear. This isn't what people voted for.
No, no, it's not. I've been talking to my members. I think some folks are feeling some sour grapes. But all I can do is be honest with them, tell them this is what we need to fight for. We need to make sure that this funding stays with fiber and the fiber build out, and this money doesn't roll over to Starlink. It is an amazing that it really seems like a grift to me.
Oh, surprise. This administration and grift. Yeah, shocking. No, but here's the thing. And this is the question I've got for you, Mike. This is the question I've got for you. And that, you know, we're talking about jobs that are good, solid union wage jobs, family sustaining wage jobs, community benefiting jobs, the kind that you want to be creating, and, well, the Musk kind of jobs. Are there jobs coming out of this if we go the Musk route?
Not that I know of. It's like you say, it's going to be satellite. So there won't be a technician in a truck. For one thing, in Georgia alone, we have two fiber manufacturing facilities. I don't think we'll be needing those if that's where that funding goes to. The technicians like myself that are out here working in the fields, installing and repair, they won't be there either. So I see a lot of folks that are not going to have a lot of work to do because of this, you know, this change in plan. I really hope it doesn't come to pass. So I'm asking my members to help me with a petition to deliver to our governors. And I'm hoping our governors can stand up and push back, because I feel like a lot of state legislators and governors, they want fiber too. And actually, I was in a committee meeting not too long ago, everything they said really let me know that the state, they want fiber.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily want this Starlink stuff.
No, they want the jobs. But they want the tax revenue. They want the economic benefit. They want that reverberation, because, you know, a growing economy, it's like a snowball going downhill. The more you're doing, the bigger it gets, the better you're going, the better everything gets. This again, I think you hit it perfectly. This seems like grift. So last question I've got for you. What can I do? What can our listeners and viewers do? If you're wearing a red hat and you're in a rural community, you should be flipping mad. You should be writing your dear leader and saying, this isn't what I voted for you over. But what do you want people doing?
I want them to, we actually have a petition. CWA has a petition. You could go to the CWA website. It's on there. I want you talking to your state legislators, talking to your governors, letting them know you don't want satellite, you want fiber. Letting these folks know that, all is not lost. We can stand together and we can stop this. And we just gotta, we don't have to do everything, but we gotta do something.
Gotta do something. That's it. Don't bury your head. Get active, get engaged, find that issue. And look, if you're in a rural community and you want decent internet, you don't want to be freezing and seeing that wheel spinning and all of that, this could be an issue you can get behind. And on a nonpartisan basis, everyone should want this investment in their community. You can go to cwa-union.org for more information. But Mike, I appreciate the time, the thoughts. Best of luck. Keep up the faith. And I hope to talk to you again sometime down the road with better news.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks so much, Mike Tharp. I want to hear your thoughts. Is this something you want to get behind? Would you like to have better internet? Maybe even a little bit cheaper? I don't know about you, but I still got one arm and leg from my internet bill. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. This day in labor history, the year was 1834. That was the day that six Englishmen, who would become known as the Toll Puddle Martyrs, were sentenced to 7 years transportation to the penal colony of Australia. Their crime? Forming a union. The men were farm laborers, who had seen their wages cut 3 times in 3 years. They began to meet to discuss forming a union, sometimes holding their gatherings under a large sycamore tree. It had recently become legal for English workers to join trade unions. But many government officials had little interest in working people banding together. The magistrates, working on behalf of the landowners, accused the union leaders of violating an obscure law against taking a secret oath. The defendants were sentenced to the brutal passage to the Australia colony for the so-called crime of pledging their solidarity to their union brothers. Few prisoners ever returned from a sentence to Australia. The judge presiding over the case called the punishment, quote, an example and a warning. Learning of his sentence, one of the convicted men wrote the lyrics of a popular union song on a piece of paper. We raise the watchword liberty. We will be free. Public outrage over the harsh sentence quickly grew. 800,000 signed a petition demanding the return of the six union leaders. The organized protest garnered results. After serving 3 years of their sentences, the exiled union men were granted free passage home. The sycamore tree that sheltered their meetings became a symbol of the trade union movement in England. Every July, thousands of people attend the Tollpool Martyrs Festival to celebrate trade unionism and to remember the sacrifices of the six farm workers.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So, again, this is one of those things that this is an excellent organizing opportunity for rural communities because Biden had said, look, we're going to bring decent broadband. We're going to bring good internet. And look, you know, Mike there's from rural Georgia. His internet is terrible. And you saw that, you know, you would see that in the video. It was struggling. And, you know, I keep coming back to this investment, you know, in the jobs that are created and the opportunities that come of it. But, you know, during the break, I was talking to Mike before I let him go. And he said, you know, the reality is, you know, because he was apologizing for the speed of his computer. And I said, well, you know, this is why we need investment. It's a perfect example of why we need investment. And he went through and he said, look, Starlink isn't going to be a lot better. You know, depending on weather conditions, it's probably going to be worse in a lot of cases. He said the best that Starlink can do, you know, on the download side is, you know, 25 to 200, depending on where you are and how the satellite hits and, you know, all kinds of things that we don't even really think about. Whereas as the fiber that they're going to lay, is the word he used was asynchronous, or synchronous, or where your upload speed and your download speed are all the same. And that's pretty remarkable. But he said, look, you know, remember, you know, when you go to a football game, the big thing that you got to think about, and you look at your phone, you go, I got 4 bars. How come I can't text or call or see anything? And it's because all of the people around you are on it. Imagine when everybody's on this Starlink, you know, how bad that's going to be. And who are you going to call? That's a problem. Now, there's a new study out by the West Virginia Building and Construction Trades Council in conjunction with the Marshall Center for Business and Economic Research. Their study from West Virginia shows that building trades jobs generated more than $8 billion in economic activity from 2022 to 2024. In fact, about $2 billion of that were wages and benefits. And they're saying, look, you know, the reality is when you build stuff, when you invest in stuff, there's a reverberation effect. It doesn't just help the workers who got, you know, good wages and good benefits. It helps, you know, your hospitals and your main street and, you know, other jobs in the community. As Mike pointed out, In Georgia, there are two fiber optic companies that make the cable that they would be laying. Those probably are going to go away. But for me, it's this investment. And I think Biden understood this. Biden understood that we need to create jobs. And those jobs should be good, high wage, good union jobs with health care and retirement and safe working conditions and all of the things that, the 20th century was really dependent on. A prosperous working class, one that through their labor earned superior wages to participate in an economy that then made the wealthy, made them wealthy. Instead of seeing it the way that I'm watching what Trump is doing, and understand, what Trump is doing is the anti-Biden. You know, Biden invested in infrastructure, so we're going to go after it. We're going to crush all this, and we're going to enrich our friends. Because I think Mike was right. It's about the grift. You know, Elon's got the Starlink up there. You know, do you want Elon Musk being in charge of your internet? This is the weird part of the world that we're in. One guy with the kind of power that he's got because of the wealth that we've given him. And this has everything to do with how bad our tax code is. But I say we've been here before. You look to the first Gilded Age, when we had the robber barons of yesteryear who were able to buy themselves elections and buy themselves a political process that enriched themselves even further. Working people got tired of it. Working people got angry. Working people had to go through a depression, but they were already organizing. You know, the 30s, the legislation of the 30s in the New Deal couldn't have happened without the organizing of the 20s, without the people who were saying, no, we want better. We're going to fight for better. We're going to go into rural communities and go, yeah, we should have phone service. We should get electricity. We should get plumbing. We should get what them city folk get, which is weird to me why Trump would go after this program. Yeah, I understand $42 billion is a lot of money, but we're so far behind the rest of the world. This is the weird thing. We like to pump up our chest and we're number one. Yeah, we're number one at being close to the bottom in broadband access. You know, I have a friend who lives in Europe. He gets the same internet speed that I get for like $50 a month, where ours is, well, it's a lot. It's like $350 a month is what I think mine is. That's crazy. Internet access today should be affordable, should be cheap. Our economy is based on being connected. And we used to understand this. We used to think this way, which is why we made it that virtually everyone could get a telephone. You go back into the 70s, there was legislation passed that everyone could get a phone, no matter how poor you were. We should be doing that with internet. We shouldn't be reliant on our corporate masters. This should be a utility. Should be even more regulated by our government. But again, we've got an administration who's anti-regulation, which means the Elon Musks are going to get wealthier. And you and me, and especially you and me who live in rural communities, we're going to continue to get sideswiped. We're going to continue to get whacked with massive bills and poor service. Is this what you voted for? We were told during the campaign that we were going to make America great. How can you be? I guess you can be great if you don't know how well everyone else is doing, I guess. And I guess it goes back to where I started today. You know, there are so many people who don't know what's going on, who aren't paying attention, who seem to know it all are on the Trump side. Interestingly enough, again, the least engaged, least informed, least activated voters are the ones who are causing the most damage because they believe. Well, believe this. If we don't invest in our nation, believe this. If we don't invest in rural communities, believe this. If we don't help create the next generation of good, solid wage, prosperous jobs, We are going to lose that superpower status. We are going to be at the mercy of the rest of the world. And at the mercy of people like Elon Musk, who I'm not buying he has any allegiance to this country other than, hey, I want to put my stamp on the world and I want to profit from it. There's a lot going on here, folks, but got to get involved, got to get active, got to get engaged. If you want to check out more on the rural broadband stuff, cwaunion.org, some information there. But I want to hear your thoughts. Is this what you voted for? Is this what you wanted? Is this good? Is this going to take us in the direction that's going to make us a great country? I want to hear it. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. President Trump is set to sign an executive order tomorrow to start dismantling the Department of Education. KPHO-TV's Michaela Castillo reports members of the Arizona Education Association have hosted a walk-in.
Strong public schools!
Dozens of educators marched at the state capitol, demanding that lawmakers do more to protect public schools in Arizona. Following President Trump's announcement earlier this month that he plans to cut nearly half of the employees at the Department of Education and may even close the department entirely.
I hear, you know, that we might lose feeding our students for free and we might lose funding for our students with differing abilities.
After 5 hours of deliberations, a jury finds Amy Bach and Salim Saeed guilty on all counts in the Feeding Our Future